Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 243 for October 28th, 2019. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we will be discussing the 318th weekly report. So if you have not had a chance to take a look at that yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports and you can access either the web or PDF version there. Today I have arranged for Norman Hallett and Jim Kenny to join us. Jim will be moderating, so I'm going to go ahead and turn over to him.
Great. Okay, good to be with everybody, and it's going to be an exciting week with all the news and all the things going on with the Fed, et cetera, and the jobs report on Friday, so keep your seatbelts on. It should be pretty volatile out there. Today, we're lucky enough to have Norman Hallett with us of thedisciplinedtrader.com, and Norm's been around for a long time helping traders with all types of factors that go into a good trader, and without further ado, Norm, give us a little background on yourself and what's going on with the Disciplined Trader.
Thanks, Jim. I like David's introduction. He's arranged to have us like we're a couple of flowers. We're a dozen roses. That's okay, but I'm always glad to be here. I believe it's going to be a great week. My focus has always been the mental and emotional issues of trading because I've just seen so many smart and capable traders fall by the wayside because they spent all of their time in on the charts and not enough time in their heads and taking care of their emotional well-being. And it's, you know, it's always just a shame. So about 15 years ago, I decided to focus totally on the mental and emotional issues. Now, I have wavered a bit in the last few years because we were having too many occurrences where we were getting traders to be very disciplined to run their trading plan without hesitation, but they had lousy trading plans with the with areas that needed shoring up, especially in the risk management area. So took a step back, developed some of the kind of exposed some of the simple trading plans that I've traded over the years and made that available to traders, but always with the idea that was just for some people who didn't have trading plans of their own. There's so many good trading plans out there, especially if you throw in if you start combining them with other types of trading like option trading and futures trading and so on. But if you take it all in total, the idea of mental training should be at least 50% of where you should be spending your time. But 20% will do you just fine if you stay focused with that 20%. So the Disciplined Trader is all about that. And in fact, we're accelerating. We've been doing private coaching for years, but really just privately for close people and others that have been referred by some professionals and helping professionals. And I won't give them names that you all know that have needed help with the mental and emotional issues. And we have the facility to do that. So we're opening up that starting a couple of weeks ago to everyone. So we're excited about the one-on-one. Actually, we call it two-on-one training because of the fact that you get to work with me and our subconscious trainer, who happens to be my wife, Tisha. And the two of us help the individual trader in a series of hourly calls. So that's really where I'm at. That's kind of my history. But I did start in options, which is always great when I talk to you because you're all about options.
Sure, and have been for a long time. Yeah, that's where basically I started out. I got together with somebody who was very sharp on options a long, long time ago. And I learned all about them through him and through, you know, training and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously experience. You know, when I think of that mental state on how to trade, it reminds me of a Springsteen line that says, have mercy on the man who doubts what he's sure of. And I think a lot of times traders, you know, they doubt themselves when they are, you know, pretty confident, but there's something going on psychologically and whatever that either fails to pull the trigger or pulls it too fast or pulls it at a different time than they originally thought and all that kind of stuff. So the mental part of it, Norm, as you know, is huge because there's a lot of smart people running around and they're not all hitting it out of the ballpark for some reason.
Well, especially in options, I think you've got to this. There's a lot of disappointment in options. You can't figure it out. Market, you know, the underlying stock moves in your direction or the underlying commodity moves in your direction and the price of the option, the premium price stays the same. Why is that happening?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, there's a number of dynamics in what results in an option premium. And so you have to just take what the market gives you and deal with it. You know, I was coaching somebody this morning and, you know, that was one of their issues, the problem with trying to track a premium and why. Yeah. And I was trying to talk about how extrinsic value is replaced by intrinsic value when you get very close to the strike price. So, you know, there's a lot to learn in investing and especially in trading. And so I think patience is one virtue that we always really concentrate on when we're working with traders.
And it's nice to have a lot of things in your soup, but you probably are going to be relying on a relatively smaller number than the entire universe. You know what I mean?
Right. No question about it.
Yeah. Well, let's start out with the standard questions that we have on a Monday, which is where do you think the S&P, which opened today at 3032, will be ending on Friday?
Well, my answer is lower, but not substantially lower. And I say lower because we're up today, and we're really near the target that I had for the week, which is in the S&P. I follow the S&P. I trade the E-minute contract, and my target is between 30.55 and 30.60, and we got pretty close to that today. We got into the lower 40 area, we backed off a bit. I still think we may touch that target, but that's all that I see. I mean, we're in and we're not sharing screens here, so this is an audio. But if you take a look at your S&P chart, you'll see the market is kind of in a channel that's moving higher, but not dramatically. So, you know, the answer to your question, and when we talk about why, I'll give you a little bit sure. more detail. Some of the sure. things I'm looking at, but I'm looking for a week that's I think we're going to be closer to the 3,000 level at the end of the week.
So this would be more of a situation where obviously there were people who had stops above 30.27, and now we've gotten those executed. And now, unless there's a fresh reason, the volume may not be able to keep the thing going.
Yeah, I mean, this is all for, this market has been full of traps the entire way up.
Yeah, a lot of times it makes a new high and then it does have a pullback.
It's not
unheard of, that's for sure. With regards to percentage confidence level, what do you think?
I have a pretty good I'm in that 66 2/3% confidence. I'm mostly confident. The market seems to wind up, but and again, I'll get into the whys, but we're not winding up in concert. So, and I'll explain what that means in a second, but I'm about to 66 2/3% confidence.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty decent confidence level. And there's other things going on besides just the S&P that people are looking at. So let's go behind the curtain here. And what are you seeing as far as things that are affecting your opinion?
Well, I'm looking at the Dow not making new highs during this early morning rush here that we had. And the FTSE is not making new highs. The DAXs and some of the other indexes are. But the fact that we're not, and the Dow is really not even that close. And neither is the FTSE for that matter. So I'm usually when you get these moves that result in some kind of drama to the upside, especially on a Monday, I just don't like the intraday action. Here we are at 1:15 Eastern time, and we're not even up 100 points right now on the Dow. And I just think, my overall opinion and something that's a very overall opinion is that because we are transitioning for the last literal decade from the industrial age to the technological age, it doesn't surprise me that the Dow Jones industrial averages don't have the power and the leadership that they used to. Now, they keep on propping it up by replacing the weaker elements of the 30 stocks with stronger elements, but that's not working as well as it used to. I just see the whole industrial complex when it comes to U.S. stocks as not being the strength of what's going on. I mean, and therefore, as long as we pay attention to that, it's going to continue to drag on some of the other indexes. But those are my primary reason. We're not seeing universal highs. Mm-hmm. We have a habit of testing. Breaking to new highs and then failing. That's pretty much it.
You're concerned that it's not a unanimous type of a thing because you've got Google today before earnings up $30, which is obviously very bullish. And then you've got the transportation average down on the day, which is kind of weird. And so basically, you were talking about the Dow as another indicator that's not confirming. The tape has definitely been drifting to the upside, but the volume on a lot of stocks I've been watching doesn't seem to be that robust. So, you know, it seems to me, and of course, there, I guess we got this China deal that sounds better. So you got something going on there. So there's a lot of cross currents, and that's what makes it a little bit difficult.
You know. Yeah, and there are some other stocks that, for instance, major stocks like Amazon. My wife had a really nice ride in Amazon, and about a year ago, she asked me, you know, what do I think about it from a technical standpoint? I thought probably time to sell. It was around 1750, right at 1750. I said, put your stop in at 1750. If it backs off there, you've taken a really nice profit. Well, the market is right at 1750 right now, and that was a year ago. So there are some major stocks out there that that are not performing. But that's the way it'll always be. You know, I think the person we had somebody on a few weeks ago that talked about sector rotations, and I think those are the people that are probably doing this more stellar than anybody else.
Yeah, you made the point about how, you know, if you have a high premium call, even if the market goes up, if it goes up at a pace that's slow, you may even lose a lot of money on it because of the time decay on the option premium. Amazon, it might be an example of a company that's still making good money, but people are not willing to pay the high PE ratio that they used to. The valuation over 100, where it was when it was at 2000, they're not willing to pay that much for a dollar of earnings. Now they're willing to pay in the 70s. So it's a stock that's still doing very good financially, but the actual price of the stock isn't doing that good because the appetite for high PE has waned. You know, I think that would be an explanation because this company's certainly still making a lot of money, but you're not getting action on the stock because, you know, how much people will pay for that $1 of earnings fluctuates. And with a company like Amazon, when you're over 100 PE ratio, they don't want you to just do well. They want you to be exceeding it by leaps and bounds because that's why they're giving you 100-to-1 PE, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you've got to be selective. Yeah. That's really what you're saying. And you know, look at Tesla. That stock, of course, has all of a sudden made money, surprisingly. And all of these stocks that have been invested in, especially in the tech industry, stocks that touch on the future, there is no PE rate. I mean, they're not earning any money, and yet they're bid up because of what you expect to happen in the future.
Yeah.
And of course, some of those stocks go to zero, and others you get paid off, but you got to be selective. And I think Tesla is going to be a stock that is just not a one-trick pony here with this move. The fact that they're going into space, I mean, you got SpaceX and so on, but they all support each other, all of his endeavors. You know, I was once in about 5 years ago, I was invited to a meeting with, it was a futurist type meeting. There were only 40 people in this room. And there were only two speakers. It was at the Singularity University in Mountain View, which was started by two guys, Peter Diamantis and Ray Kurzweil. Peter Diamantis he's all over the internet with his futuristic, you know, he was the first one to throw out big money to get problems solved. And Ray Kurzweil has been called the smartest man in the world by many people. And he made the Kurzweil synthesizer. You'll see that all the major bands that you'll see touring uses Kurzweil synthesizers as well. And he's a gene splicer. Anyway, I was sitting next to him. That's another story. But the story that I wanted to tell you about was he was up there. There's a 2-day conference where just the two of them were talking. There were two stools, and one would talk for 45 minutes, and the other would talk for 45 minutes. And they talked about mining asteroids. This was 5 years ago. And they're doing that now. They're actually mining asteroids. And somebody says, well, how do you land on an asteroid? They're speeding. He says, it's much easier to land on an asteroid than it is to land on the moon. What? We said. And he says, well, when you land on the moon, you've got to concern yourself with gravity, and you've got to take a lot of fuel with you so that when you land on the moon, you use the retro rocket so you don't crash. So with an asteroid, all you have to do is match the speed of an asteroid, and then there is no gravity on an asteroid because it's so small mass. A small mass, and you just literally float right onto the surface. So it's much easier to land on an asteroid than it is to land on the moon. And it just started me thinking, you know, there's a lot of thinking that's going on out there that I am not aware of. road. And I think you got to be real selective with the brains behind this company, these companies. And, you know, mining asteroids is going to be a big thing. So that's
but your point there is that this guy, Musk, maybe on the cutting edge of some things that are beyond most imagination.
That's right. And if you're going to,
and if he is on, you know, kind of like Gates back when he started with the computer or something like that, or Amazon, when they talked about this massive marketing company they were going to create. In other words, you know, if you get the right guy who's on the right idea with the right plan, obviously it can be a real big home run. And that's what people, obviously you're saying, is thinking about Musk.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, the he smokes pot on TV. He's an out there guy.
Yeah.
And if you judge them, and if you judge him by some of the out there things that he does, I think you're going in the wrong direction.
Right.
I think you've got to understand. I mean, he's
well, that's probably nerve wracking because I don't think Gates and Allen or Bezos came off as quite as volatile and eccentric, you know?
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it.
So anyway, with regards to Tesla, it's gone way up. I saw there's a gap between 325 and 350. So it'll be interesting to see if it can get above that 350 number after it closes the gap and keep running, because it had a parabolic move here very recently. Do you ever watch any of these, things like MRTX today is in the news because it's got a cancer drug that might be coming out and volume is double on the stock and the options are going crazy. Do you ever look at anything like inordinate option activity or, you know, newsy type things like this thing?
No, you know, I concentrate mostly on commodities.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And the futures market. But I do, you know, I did notice the bid or the about to be bid on for Fitbit today, mm-hmm. Which is causing some action there. So, you know, I do keep some of the news out there, but I am.
You're specializing in the commodity sector.
That said, when we get to the part of the show just a little bit later where we get to special situations, there is a stock that I think is ready to go and maybe starting to go. That's in a in an area that I usually don't deal with. It just happens to be a particular focus of mine.
Right. It came to you and you're finding it really compelling.
Yeah, I mean it's starting to move and there are reasons why. And I want to give kind of the background of it in a few minutes of how some of these tech and the parabolic. You mentioned the word parabolic. Mm-hmm. You know, before a stock moves in a parabolic way, there's usually plenty of pain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's an expectation over time that usually doesn't get met and those that lack of expectation causes a sinking of a price. Sometimes below, you know, what looks reasonable, below $5 or a dollar or whatever. But, you know, that's one of the stocks that I want to point to today and what's happening. They could have survived that situation and maybe ready to take off. But yeah, what have you noticed? I mean, you're the guy that
I guess today there's been a lot of activity in Abercrombie and Fitch. A lot of option activity. It's obviously a beaten down stock, but it is a retail stock. We are going into the holidays, so it seems like some people might be betting that there could be a little bit of a bounce out of that. And then I've been watching AT&T, and once Singer got involved, mm-hmm. With Elliott Management, you know, I thought that was a pretty good deal, and it pays a huge dividend. And today it's up about 5%. So, you know, some stuff like that hits my radar and makes me interested. And of course, when the oils went way down, and I'm seeing the Aramco situation coming to market soon. I figure the Saudis don't want to see a tanking oil price if they're trying to bring a $2 trillion offering to market. And so what's the likelihood that Royal Dutch Shell that's trading at 50 or 51 is going down to 40? And what's the likelihood that it might go up into that gap of 65? And so I thought that was a pretty good bet down there as well. These oil stocks, have had a pretty good bounce despite the fact that oil really hasn't gone through the roof. But I just think, the oil market, the oil stocks have been a pretty good place to get a little bit of a bounce. So, I keep my radar up on all this stuff. And of course, the gold stocks I thought were fabulous, but then I thought they'd pull back, which they have. And now I'm just in the process of figuring out where they'll stop and then when you can reload on those. But
Jake is a bear on right now on the gold. He believes that he's topped out, right?
Yeah, well, that's my feeling. 1580, 1520 was a sell zone to me because it was the lows from 2012. And of course, we got about 20 or 30% above the moving averages on the gold stocks. So that was a good time to get off. The question is, you know, is the whole game over? And I'm not willing to say that at all. So the bottom line, because, you know, the deficits are going through the roof and they'd love to see the dollar start tanking. The dollar has started to roll over. So I'm definitely not a bear on the gold, but I'm being a little bit more cautious about when I re-enter. You know, you get above 1600, you know, there's no waiting anymore. But until then, waiting has not been a terrible thing.
Well, you mentioned the energy stocks, the oil stocks. This is a very critical week for my timing in the crude oil, which of course is has a direct effect on all those stocks. But we're seeing, you know, we saw a little strength this morning, followed by some pretty substantial weakness right now. And you know, we get about a dollar or a dollar and a half lower from here. We could break and see that you know, that 52, 53 level pretty quickly. So
yeah, because what do you call it? The Royal Dutch Shell, you know, was a good value down in the low 50s, and then my target was 62. You get above 60 and your target's 62. It's time to you know, profit, adjust the position, hedge it, do whatever you want to do, but don't sit there and just watch it go back down.
Yeah, no, I mean, my advice out there, if you're considering buying oil stocks, I would hold off here.
Yeah, yeah, because it already had a run from 50 up to 60. That's a 20% move. So this is not the time to start entering. The thing is, with oil, as far as oil, it seems like it would have to get above 60 and sustain, or below 50 and sustain, to really pound the table and say it's in a trend one way or the other. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, but what other? Yeah, I think what people would like to know a little bit more about, Norm, other than obviously you're dealing with the psychological aspects. Is there any technical indicators or any base way that you come to conclusions at all?
You know, I look for. It really depends if I'm doing what kind of trading I'm doing, but
right.
I've learned to pay a lot of attention to the 8-day exponential moving average. I've learned to combine that with my view of what's going on with the RSI, and if I get an indication that both of those indicators are talking one direction with authority, those are where my trades come from. I mean, right now, for instance, I'm looking at a chart in the December crude oil, mm-hmm. and I'm seeing that we are nicely above the 8-bar. This is a daily chart, the 8-bar exponential moving average, right at around that 50, the 8-day line exponential moving average is right at that 55.30 level. So at this point, it changes all the time. But with the market right now in December at 55.87, we're only a half a dollar from that. If we break that and close below that moving average, at the same time, when I'm looking at the RSI, we're between a band that is very suspect when it comes to rallies. And that band is between 55 and 65 on the RSI.
Yep.
If the market heads in that, if the market, I mean, most people are sitting there waiting for it to go over 70 to be overbought. But that 55 to 65 level, if it struggles there, and if you look at a daily chart in crude oil, and I'm looking at something that goes way back to May, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, this will be the 6th time, where the RSI mm-hmm. is within that band, but failed to break the band and started to move lower. Now, the price is still the most important thing. Mm-hmm. The price in some of those areas did spike and so on, but what you look for is a hesitation in that 55 to 65 band combined with a breakdown below the 8-bar moving average, and that's where I get some very strong signals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say that if you want to if you want to confirm that, I look at different time frames mm-hmm. in the same market, and the most important time frame next to it is the 240 minute or the 4-hour moving average, again the 8-bar exponential moving average. That's also now breaking below that. So we're at 53 right now, having hung around right above that 65 level for a while, mm-hmm. and now is breaking down the 8-bar exponential moving average for the 240 has now broken substantially that, and if we close down here, that will be one step closer. The crude oil, the 30 minute, the 60 minute, they've all broken. And so when I see the unison in the break, and I see that they've all broken from the from that from that 55-60 band, which they all have broken from the 55-60 band, RSI band, I get very excited about the potential of crude falling if we see that happening in the daily chart.
And do you do a crossover with the 4-hour and the 8-day, or?
No, you know, I don't compare the two. I keep them separate because really I've also learned that you can't look at another time frame or another market and make that a signal for the time frame of market that you're looking at. I've made that mistake many times, you know, shorting copper because I think gold, because I think the stock market's going to go down, or shorting a longer time frame because all the shorter time frames are breaking. You have to wait for your signal. But sometimes it will affect my position sizing, mm-hmm. especially if I get a nice move in the daily, which is what I'm looking at in the group.
And you obviously thought the break under the 56.30 area was the first 55, shot. I was looking at the December. Are you looking at a different one?
Oh, no, I'm looking at the, yes, I'm looking at the December. I am looking at December, but I'm looking at what I want to see is a break below the 8-bar exponential moving average, which right now is at 55.31.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, then you'd be taking out that 55.5 area, which obviously would be, you're looking to not be the first guy at the party. You're looking for a little bit of momentum and then jump on the train.
That's right. And again, the fact that it's happening not coincidentally with a momentum indicator that's showing me that we don't have the kind of momentum that we should have for that kind of rally.
Yeah.
But you got to watch it with looking at these kinds of indicators because it really depends on the close.
Where they take it home.
Yeah, because really that's where the Japanese, that's why candles to me, although there's been a lot of recent poo-pooing about candle analysis, I've always loved them. It's always been a friend for me because I do think that it shows you the emotional content of the market. The fact mm-hmm. that in the beginning, when the market opens, people have thought about it, they've decided, they've made their move, and at the end, they know they're going to go home with what they're going to they're going to leave with. And so that's where the emotion hits the peak, and that's where real decisions happen. So gotta wait for the close.
Well, is there any other commodities that are coming? I mean, do you go into the grains at all? Because you know, my feeling was that soybeans would have a good rally, and they did. But I also, my feeling is that 950 area is kind of important, and it's having some difficulty getting through.
Well, I mean, I'm bearish on the I'm looking at the January soybeans right now, mm-hmm. and we had our break on Friday, where we had, and if one is looking at a daily chart in the soybeans, you're looking at a lot of tails that are on the northerly part of the bar, a lot of shooting stars in succession that could fool a lot of traders. But on Friday we broke again to that below that 8-bar moving average, exponential moving average.
And where was that, about 940, or where is it?
I'm looking right at the 940 level right now. That moving average is at 942, market's at 937. But the great part about it is for traders is that even a rally to the soybeans comes in a very small bite-sized piece, you know, 5,000 bushels, which to every penny's $50. You could take out. There's not a whole lot of risk mm-hmm. to put your stop where I would put it would be above 2 days before. In this particular case, would be 953. So you're looking at about a $750 risk here. Now, when I'm not in it, I look for a rally for the smaller accounts. If you're looking at this, I look for a rally toward that 8-bar exponential moving average without crossing it to reduce my risk and still keep me on the right side of the trade, the correct side of the trade, which I think is the subtly chart of the trade. Now, in addition, the market has spent about 80% of the last 5 weeks in that band between 55 and 65 on the RSI mm-hmm. Without being able to really, it did break one time, but it was very, very quick and tried to test it and had a failure. So, and now we're sitting just slightly below that 55 or 53.88 at this moment in time on the RSI. And that to me is telling me that this market, if we can get a nice little rally for those not in it to the 940 area, just a few cents above, it'd be a nice place to short for a $500 risk. I think it's with it really, really a lot of potential. The market could easily see 896 and even lower. So you're looking at 5-to-1, 6-to-1 potential.
With regards to the China situation, they're supposed to buy all this beans. You think it's already in the price, or do you think that's a factor that could be headline risk?
You know, if you're asking my fundamental view of it, I think we've been up because of the fact that now the negotiations is in stages and we're putting together the first stage and everything looks good. But you know, what follows that is confirmation of the first stage, which usually results in a pullback or a total disappointment that the first stage is not going to happen. So I think there's a lot of the odds are in your favor to be contrarian from a standpoint of looking for great deals. I don't think it's in the cards that we make a total deal with them, and I think that's almost what you need here. I mean, there's plenty of soybeans around.
I got you.
Although in Brazil they do have some problems with the weather. When we finish our harvest, everybody's going to be pointing toward the Brazilian crop, which is not perfect. So that's keeping some strength in the soybean market. But the technicals are telling me that we should see a wave down before the next wave up.
Now, one of the things you mentioned that might be not just specific to soybeans or anything else is that RSI. A lot of people believe that if it's above 50, it's a positive thing and bullish, and if it's under 50, it's a negative. You've come up with more of a 65 number, 55, 65 number, that as long as it's under that it's still possibly bearish type of thing?
Yeah, I think so too. There's also something that the most important indicator, the strongest indicator, is the divergent indicator, where you get a new high price, but you don't get a new high RSI reading.
Right.
And I've noticed that it doesn't necessarily have to be high. For instance, in the current soybean chart, we're looking at the January 20 soybean chart. Mm-hmm. We made our absolute recent high at 959.5.
Right.
The RSI was at at 72.44. And now a week later, six trading days later, we had a high of 959. So just a fraction below that, but the RSI was at 945.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm showing a matching in the high, but a weakness in momentum. That made me sensitive toward looking for a break below the 8-bar exponential moving average. I kept on feeling that it would happen because of all the tails that were resulting, all the shooting stars that were resulting, and finally got my break. So, I think that when you anticipate something and it gives it to you, as a trader, you got to take it. I mean, you got to.
Now, here's something that might be very helpful, Norm, and very interesting, is that we hit a high in July on the S&P E-mini. And now we just recently today hit a new high on the E-mini. So obviously the RSI would have a relationship to those two highs. Is today's high being confirmed with a higher RSI, or is the RSI lagging and giving us a little bit of a tip that there's a divergence?
Let's take a look. Take a look at the S&P.
I've noticed the volume on most stocks on a 50 and 200-day basis are very much higher than the volume during this advance. And I would find that concerning if I wanted to get really bullish.
Well, the RSI on that July high, and that was in the 20s, it looks like the 26th. Let me just get it for you here. RSI was 63.08.
63.08.
Yeah, today we're sitting at we're at 62.65 currently, probably right at that high when this market was at its high today. So we're matching that.
There's not a dramatic divergence, but there's certainly not a running away look
right,
to it either.
So typical of these rallies where we're just not getting
a volume hit.
We're just not getting the power.
Yeah.
Now there was also a high back.
So
in
this thing was going 75 or 80. Now you'd have a lot different view on this thing might come back by the end of the week, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think people underestimate the power of what they're reading as an overbought market when we get over 70.
Right.
But I know somebody that just loves the market, and she's very smart. Hema, you've probably met Hema.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if she was here, she'd love that between 70 and 80. She really looks at to go over 80 to be over. What it means when you're at 72, 73, 74 is you got a damn strong market.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If we were 75 or 80, there'd be no debate that we could get that 10% run up to 3,300 on the S&P. But with a 60, and your idea that sometimes sometimes as long as it's under 65, it's still not the greatest look to it. That would lead one to think that this move of 10% up to 3,300 might not be happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the RSI is the closest thing to a leading indicator that you can get to. There's a couple of them, but I just had a lot of success with looking for divergences in the RSI to match breakdowns in the pricing, especially below that 8-bar exponential moving average. So, I have screens set up that really are just small boxes that for the daily, the 240 minute, the 60 minute, the 30 and the 10, depending on how much time I have to trade. If I'm sitting down, I generally don't hold positions overnight unless I'm trading off the daily chart or 240. But when you're looking at it, I'm constantly looking for those combinations of an RSI in an area that I like to see. And on the downside, in the same area where I watch for short trades between 55 and 65, from the long side, I'm watching between 40 and 50, which is not necessarily intuitive. That's a little higher than normally you would look for on the long side, but between 40 and 50. And I didn't make this up. This is Hema's stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've just learned to really respect it. She's
well, you've seen there's some consistency to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with when the divergence happened.
Let's jump over to the metals, because obviously a lot of people got either schnookered in at the high point or they are looking to add to their positions during dips. What are we seeing on the gold as far as you're concerned? We're at 1495 ballpark, down about 10 bucks.
Yeah, and we are, if you connect the bottoms from September, from the second week of September, there's another bottom right at the 2nd of October, the second trading day of October. You connect those, you'll get a sloping down line. And same thing if you look at an early September high and connecting that with a late September high, you'll get an equally sloping line, pretty much at the same angle. And we're still within that range. We hit the high of that upper band, and went through it intraday on Friday, but closed below that line. Today we're breaking below that again. And today we've broken below on the daily chart that 8-bar exponential moving average. If we close here,
what's a ballpark number on that 8-day you're looking at?
The 8-day is 97.2.
1497.20.
Yeah. And again, as the market moves up and down, that market will move. But and generally, that 97 area. But what I like about it is the combination that I see. If anybody bothers to pull up the December 19 gold chart, a daily chart, you'll see that Friday's session was wound up to be a shooting star,
right?
Followed by a breakdown below that combination. I have developed a trading system based on that combination being a trigger. We call it I call it loaded gun, because it looks like a loaded gun. The small body of the shooting star, along with the barrel, which is the movement today down through that 8-bar exponential moving average, where if we wound up here, you short at the close and then put your stop in above the tail of the exponential moving average. Of the shooting star.
Of the shooting star, right?
And you've got to measure your risk. But again, if you're trading gold, you've got to be very careful. Now they have, if smaller accounts can take a small, there are 33 ounce contracts.
Yeah, the kilo bar. Yeah.
For smaller, the kilo. So there's a smaller account there. So you got to be careful. But I do think that it's showing signs of weakness again. Now, if you connect the bottoms, there's a triangle here. There's a pennant. If you connect that same low that occurred the second trading day of October, and you connect it to the end of let's see what trading day that is.
It's like 1460, something like that.
Yeah, this is actually a 1484. The first one is at that 1460 level.
That's on the first of the month,
of the trend line, and then you connect it up to that small, very small trading day that actually made a low that day. That connect those lines, and you're coming up with a triangle that or a flag that is, we've stayed within that range. So the good news is that we're narrowing, and we should see what's going to happen in the next few trading days.
Right.
My guess is if we close down here below that 8-bar moving average, we're going lower.
Right.
But
this 1480 area looks like it's an area that if they started breaking that with some volume, that could be interesting.
I agree. And what's making me hesitate is that where the RSI is playing between that 40 and 50 area,
okay,
which could have a potential to rally. So,
right,
you know, that would make my, it wouldn't stop me from taking the trade more than likely, because I think the combination of a shooting star with a follow through move with power crossing the 8-bar exponential moving average, that combination rules supreme to me.
What did the RSI look like, Norm, when we had the shooting star up to 1520?
It looks like about 52.
Okay, so it went near. It seems like if it gets into that 50 to 65 or 55
to
65.
That's really no man's land right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, well, I'm saying that seems to be a stretch point if you wanted to be neutral or bearish.
Right.
And if we went 75 or 80, then forget about neutral or bearish.
Right. You know, I let my position sizing vary if I'm not getting the confirmation. This, even though I love the signal from a price standpoint, shooting star followed by power through the 8-bar exponential moving average, I'm going to have a very light position because, again, I've learned to have my all my indicators line up before I really load up on something.
Yeah, because if you're going to risk real money, you don't want to do it on a half-baked item.
Well, speaking of risk, I know we're getting close to the end, and I do want to mention this stock that.
Okay,
let's
switch over. Yeah,
I actually own this stock, and I have owned it for quite a while, trading it. And I haven't had a whole lot of success in it because this is a very long-term play.
Right.
But it is a stock, and I'm going to pull it up right here. It's a stock called, it's a pot stock, and the pot sector has been getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pot stock called MedMen, M-E-D-M-A-N. MedMen it's a stock that the problem with the stock is, same problem with all the pot stocks, and that's they're just not making any money. And the kind of the bloom is off the rose, so to speak. But they're doing it in a completely different way, not a completely different way, but they're controlling a lot of the real estate that they own the stores in, that they have the stores in. This is the way, I think besides the Catholic Church, I think McDonald's is the largest landowner in the United States.
That's right.
And this feels like the same thing. They've got some real estate. Their cash flow is the problem. And that's why the market has been driven down all the way from $7 or $8 all the way down to a dollar. Just a few days ago, last week, we actually broke a dollar to 99 cents. Today, we're trading at $1.39. Now that's a 39% move.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you got to be careful down here with these stocks. But you know, if you're looking for a pot stock with long term potential, I think here's one you should look into. I actually, before I started feeling long term about it, when I was in Las Vegas, I walked into one of their stores. Have you ever been to one of these pot
stores? No, I live here in Vegas. So where is it located? You remember?
I don't know.
The street?
It's Flamingo, but I think it's the other part of Flamingo, above everything.
West Flamingo.
But I mean, they got billboards all over.
Yeah, I've seen it. To be honest, I've seen the billboards. It's just not my cup of tea, so it's not
right,
something
right.
I've been getting involved in.
Well, the you walk in and it's like an Apple store.
Right.
It's amazing when they have first they check your ID, then you go in and they've got somebody with a tablet that walks you around. He's kind of educating me, and I thanked him and walked out. But the idea is that these operations are very slick, and once there's a lot of fundamental around it. If the Democrats wind up getting in, which is still likely a 50-50 thing, it's a much more pot-friendly environment, and these stocks should have a run. But when you're looking at a stock this inexpensive, where it's got the potential to make multiple percentage gains, hundreds and thousands, it may be worth a tickle for the very speculative part of your
portfolio. Yeah, obviously it's a penny stock, so you're not going to be putting your IRA in it or something like that. If it's something that you think the industry is here to stay, and if you believe that the people who are involved in the properties may be able to benefit from that, then this might be worth a look that way.
Yeah, and we're tickling. I think at $1.63, my calculation this morning, $1.63, we're breaking the 50-day moving average. average. So, you know, there's a few things that I like about it, but mostly, you know, this is something that you have to hold for a while.
These guys are actually on the real estate side of it, meaning they're leasing the buildings and stuff like that, or?
That's how I understand it. Now, not all of them, but they have, they're very big in Canada. I think they may be bases, I remember, out of Canada originally, but they've got, they probably have, I believe I read that they had more locations than anybody else now in the States. And they're really moving in strongly in Florida,
right?
Which is, I think, the next state to fall, they think, if the Democrats get in. So that, you know, you've got to look way ahead. That's a year away.
And you'd probably encourage people to do their own homework and investigation on it as well.
Absolutely.
Because obviously, you know, we're talking about a stock that's just a little bit above a buck. It's in an industry that is new. And again, you don't work for MedMen as far as you don't know
but
exactly.
But I do own the stock. So people, you know, full disclosure, I own the stock.
Yeah.
And if people buy enough of it, I may even get back to even.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's something, you know, like I say, you feel good about, but it'd be important for everybody else to do their own homework and research before they put any dough into it. And the thing is to you, it obviously makes sense, but they'd make their own decisions after they looked into it.
Yeah, and I've, you know, I just didn't do this in a cursory level. I mean, about 5 years ago, I went to Las Vegas and I attended a expo because I thought it'd be something that I'd be talking about, maybe making a whole thing out of it for helping others with this kind of an industry. And I went to a place that they had like 300 people at this convention, and across the street there was another cannabis convention that had 10,000 people. This was 10 years ago, or 5 years ago. And I said to myself, well, there's got to be something here. There's a lot of interest. So that's what really got me started to really narrow it down to the three and the five, the five and then the three and then the one that I was going to focus on.
Well, like I say, you know, as you say, it's a very volatile industry now. This thing started out very, very well, and obviously it's hit the skids like many things have hit the skids. And the question that has to be answered is, do you think the future looks brighter? You obviously think so, and anyone who's listening can do their own homework and figure that out as well. We are coming to the top of the hour, and so basically, if you just want to reintroduce yourself and what Disciplined Trader is doing, and if you have any special offers, Norm, you want to extend, this would be the great time to do that.
Yeah, I'd like, you know, if you, I just saw that, I think some, I don't know how they get the calculations, but apparently the Mental Fitness for Traders, the ebook I wrote about 10 years ago, Mental Fitness for Traders, is now over 250,000 downloads. And I think, you know, if you'd like, if you don't have a copy, please, please get a copy of this, because I try to write it in a style that was fun and engaging. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. If you're a trader, I'll make you cry and smile in the same couple of paragraphs. So if you go to thedisciplinedtrader.com/M, again, Mental Fitness for Traders. So MF, the number 4 and the letter T, MF4T. So thedisciplinedtrader.com/Mental Fitness for Traders, MF4T, the number 4 and T. And download the book, the ebook. And after that, on the thank you page, there'll be some talk, there'll be an offer or some talk about this coaching that I talked about. And it's probably only pertinent to people with $25,000 accounts and more. It's not cheap, but it's the only thing, it's the only kind of training of its kind, and it's the best out there. So, you know, if you've got a larger account, 25,000, 50, 100, a million, then, you know, the small amount for one-on-one coaching, it's a two-month program that's really going to get you mentally fit. And so I encourage you to download the book and enjoy the book for everybody. And if you have a larger account, maybe consider filling out an application for the, if you're seeing that trading discipline is getting in your way. I mean, there's a lot of smart traders out there. Like I said, this is what got me started in the mental and emotional area, but it's just a shame that you can't get past the mental and emotional issues and keep making the same mistake over and over again. So I can help you cut that out. My wife and I, and that's how it all started. This whole thing started with, she got me out of my own doldrums. And I said to myself, I got to show other traders this. And that's how it all started years ago. So I really thank you for having me. Thank David. It's always enjoyable talking to you.
You bet, Norm. And like I say, you could check out thedisciplinedtrader.com. You know, there's a staleness that happens to people in their trading. And one way to, overcome that staleness is to obviously shake up your routine. And I think Norm can help a lot of people with some of the psychological hurdles that they might be facing. So there's no question looking into that makes a lot of sense. I'm Jim Kinney, optionprofessor.com. Every week I have a Mark market update on all the different markets, from the stock market to gold, silver, crude, the dollar, interest rates, you name it. And so I give you my observations and opinions on a weekly basis. Just shoot an email to me at optionprofessor@gmail.com if you'd like to receive that, and we'll get you rigged up. Right now, I'm going to turn it back over to David. And thanks, Norm, for being here today. And obviously, you'll be back soon, I hope.
Yeah, well, again, thank you. And shout out to Jake. I hope you've got your electricity back. He's in California, apparently.
Yeah, that's a rough place to be.
Yeah Jake, hopefully he'll be able to join us again soon. So everyone can keep an eye out for that. But yeah, thanks, guys. Great discussion. So just a quick reminder for everyone watching, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory so you can get updates on future shows. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access there to any of the past reports or shows. Tomorrow will be the 100th episode of Analyze Your Trade, and Dean Jenkins, who helped me create that show, will be on. It's been a few months since he's been able to be on, so he'll be back for that one. So you can always go to timingresearch.com/live to get access to the live events there. And I just want to thank my guests again for today. Norman Hallett of thedisciplinedtrader.com, thanks for joining us again. And Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com, thanks for moderating.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, guys.